former NHL GM and scout, now analyst on TSN. Craig Button joins us once again. Butts, how you doing, my man?
I'm really well, Jason. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing excellent. I got some questions I want to get to, but first, I know there's a lot of people suggesting that you were ripping Patrick Maroon last week, and I know we wanted to kind of get into that a little bit more.
Okay, well, it's good. Thanks for doing this, because number one, I wouldn't rip Patrick Maroon. I really like him. But the first thing is, when the day he got traded, listen, I was being glib on TSN. Probably not a recommended path for me to take. I was just being glib. Number two is, it was a great trade for the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, I think somewhere in that, we lost our path, and I lost my way. When you trade a player, Martin Gernat, and a draft pick, and the other team picks up, and you're looking to get bigger, I mean, those are the types of trades you're looking to make. Now, independent and separate of that, I was just pointing out why Patrick Maroon may have been available. That was it. Right? I mean, he's had spots of inconsistency in his game, but that doesn't mean he can't help the Oilers. And finally, a couple years ago when he was playing in the playoffs and he was playing with Getzlaff and Perry, I mean, you could see that he'd be a good part. He finds consistency. He'll help the Oilers and he'll be good and sometimes need that pinch between the shoulder blades. Finally, all my point, and we got onto a separate discussion about philosophy on changing players. And yes, some players, need to be in a different situation, and I get that. But I was talking in an overall sense. I wasn't talking about Patrick. So let's be done with that. Listen, I think that he's come a long ways to get to the NHL, and hopefully he's found a resting place, a home, so to speak, not a resting place, in Edmonton.
Well, I can tell you, I don't expect him to be 5 points in five games guy that he has been thus far for Edmonton. But if he's a complimentary forward on your team for the next few years, make it $1.5 million, that's an excellent addition for the Oilers. Now, speaking
and contributing in the way he can,
yeah,
and that he's shown, right? Like, I mean, when you show that you can play with players like Getzlaff and Perry, I mean that becomes enticing, and I want that to be clear. That's all.
Yeah, and the other thing he adds, Craig, is what the Oilers had none of, which is a little bit of skilled size and abrasiveness, which is something that's been lacking.
You're right about that.
Yeah. Now, before I want to get to Nolan Patrick, who's playing for the Brandon Wheat Kings. He's got a late birthday. Otherwise, he'd be in the draft this year. And if he was in the draft this year, I'd say he's a lock to be a top five pick and might be a lot closer to number one than people think. The last few years, there was a lot of hype McDavid leading up and Eichel and even Austin Matthews. How come there's not as much hype about Nolan Patrick as there was these other three guys? Because I think he's an electrifying player.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Last year, I said in the next three drafts, there are going to be four number one elite centers, McDavid, Eichel, Matthews, and Nolan Patrick. And I hadn't seen a stretch like that in the history of the NHL draft. Never had I seen a stretch like that. I mean, elite number one centers are so hard to find. So, I don't know why there's not some notoriety around Nolan Patrick. To me, the guy is a brilliant, brilliant player. I'll go one step further than you, Jason, having seen all these kids. I don't think there's any question that Nolan Patrick would be the second pick in this year's draft if he was eligible, at worst. He's a centerman, and I'm always taking a centerman over a winger where it's close. So as good as Lyonnais and Puljujärvi are, they're not centers. I'm taking that complete center. In my view, Patrick would be no worse than the second pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, he probably could right now, I would think, be the guy to be the favorite for number one next year.
Well, okay, so I'll go back. I said this 2 years ago. I always qualify this because you see players and you know full well that there's a lot of players that haven't emerged yet, haven't shown what they're fully capable of, right? So I always say it like this. I always say, okay, if there's a better player than Nolan Patrick for the 2017 draft, I haven't seen him yet. And you know what? There's a couple of players that are in the running. Like when I say in the running, that you can put in the discussion right now. Timothy Liljegren, a defenseman from Sweden. He's already played in the Swedish Hockey League as a 16-year-old for Rögle. Real dynamite player. Some similarities in terms of style of play to Drew Doughty and Maxime Comtois, who plays in Victoriaville. But to me, Patrick stands alone. I'm just telling you two guys that might be in that conversation, but to me, Nolan, I've yet to see a better player than Nolan Patrick. Yet to see him.
Greg Button from TSN joins us. Greg, we had a texter ask, you know, he's not a big fan of the lottery, and I think it's gotten way better now. I've never really been a big believer in tanking, and now that you've got three chances to lose, I don't think teams are doing it that much realistically. I just think the bad teams end up being the bad teams regardless. But he thought about having the bottom four teams have a playoff to win, kind of similar. I don't know if you play fantasy football or not, but usually the bottom four teams in a fantasy league, if they don't make it, they battle it out to see who gets the first pick next year. Do you think there'd be any chance the NHL would ever consider that? Because there is potential for more revenue because those are lottery playoff games.
I'm never going to rule something out. I really believe it's remote, Jason. You know, there's been modifications to the lottery system. I mean, even last year, you know, the team that was that finished with the worst record in the league had their chances for winning the lottery reduced from 48% to 25%. It might have even happened the year before. I'm not exactly sure on the exact time and when it was implemented. And now, so you reduced it from that, not 48 down to 25. Now this year, the first three picks are going to be determined by the lottery, a weighted lottery. So, you know, they're making modifications to it. And to your point, you know, this whole idea about tanking, you know, there's a lot of things. I think it's as hard to be a top team as it is to be a bottom team in a salary cap world. Because if you didn't have a salary cap, you just say, well, we're spending $8 million and we're just going to pay players right at the minimum. We're not going to have very many good players. But in a salary cap world where you got to spend $53 million, it's really hard to be at the bottom of the league. So, you know, I think it's largely based on a lot of mistakes that have been made, a lot of mismanagement over years. And to me, I'm not fussed by it. Like, and again, I would think that would be a very, very remote thing that could come into place. But, you know, maybe we end up with a situation and a scenario where this just becomes too big of a problem, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah, like, you know, this year it's going to be interesting. And this year, Greg, it'll probably be the most watched TV event of the playoffs in Canada, because all seven Canadian fan bases are going to be in on it because none of them are in the playoffs. Like, honestly, I think that Saturday, I know it's not officially announced, but it sounds like it's going to be April 16th. That'll probably be the largest audience of the entire playoffs in Canada.
I can't disagree with you. I mean, the Stanley Cup final, because people are interested, right? But there's no question that, you know, when you have every single market interested in knowing where they're going to pick come draft time, that definitely is a strong possibility. And there's no question about it. And, you know, it'll be interesting with the draft lottery. And I mean, as good as and I think Austin Matthews stands alone at number one. But at the same time, you know, McDavid last year was such a unique circumstance, and you looked at Jack Eichel and okay, well, you can't call him a consolation prize. I mean, you're going, wow, that's pretty darn good. But I think that teams are looking at it and fans are looking at it now and going, there's some really good players here. And now at two now, the debate becomes, is it Laine? Is it Puljujarvi? And for me, Jason, and we'll get into this more as the weeks unfold, I think Pierre-Luc Dubois is really working his way into that conversation with the two Finns.
Really?
Yep.
Ooh.
He's that good.
Yeah.
He's that good. He's, you know, he plays the game in a similar manner to Jamie Benn. He's got a ruggedness to him. He can make plays. He can shoot the puck. And you remember a couple of years ago, they put Jamie Benn in the middle because they thought he was good enough. I mean, his best position is the wing, I think, and he's playing there. But Pierre-Luc Dubois played in the middle too. And so I have no question he's in that category right after Matthews in the two Finns. But I think he's working himself right into that conversation with the two Finns.
Well, I tell you, I saw him at the Top Prospects game, and he was the player that impressed me the most on the ice. Well, McLeod actually was pretty good as well. And just,
so why are you surprised then when I bring up Dubois?
Well, no, I'm not surprised. Just to jump up right to the Finns. Now, I've only watched the Finns at the World Juniors, right? And and they look great there. And honestly, I've only seen Dubois twice, and I liked him a lot. But you know, when you see guys always in the top two and three, and to jump, I wouldn't be shocked, because the one thing I liked about him, Craig, was a big body, and we're seeing it nowadays, like big bodies that can skate. Like that's not the, you know, that used to kind of be the exception. It's almost the norm now. There's very few big bodies who don't skate well as far as draft pick players come, but Dubois, his puck protection already was the thing that impressed me the most.
Yeah, and I mean, and you talk about that size with the skill, with the skating ability, and we talk about Lion A, and we talk about Puljujarvi, right? That's why I have Dubois in that category. I think he's deserving of being in that discussion. And like, does it become a serious conversation, or does it become, okay, maybe, you know, don't sleep on Pierre-Luc Dubois? I'm not quite ready to say he belongs fully in the conversation, but he belongs in it.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, we're getting closer to the season. It, you know, it starts to wear down for some teams. Quickly on the Edmonton Oilers, their defense, of course, is decimated again with injuries and then a suspension to Darnell Nurse. But I look at the Edmonton Oilers, and it's late in the season now. Cam Talbot's playing lights out. It's unbelievable how well he's playing. But this team is not giving up, you know, like they're competing much harder than they have down the stretch in many other years. I know they've still got to improve a lot of areas, and Chiarelli's done some of it, but I'm seeing just a different willingness from the group that I haven't seen before. Do you think that can carry over to next year? Is there anything to take from that, or do you still say until they improve the defense, it's only one small thing?
Well, no, I mean, there has to be hope, Jason, and I'll say it again. I sound like a broken record, but Tom McCollum is a terrific coach, and you know, you come in and you have an idea, Peter Chiarelli. You come in and you Todd to a greater extent than Peter because he was in the Western Conference and played against Edmonton. So you come in and you have some ideas and you have some thoughts, but for Todd, he hasn't coached the players and he hasn't stood behind the bench and understood, like, okay, how does this guy respond to a push? And that takes time to learn. Peter and his evaluations, you know, you have your own ideas and you've had scouting reports from your previous time in Boston, but you know, now it's your own eyes and listening to other people. And I think, you know, that takes time, but I think one of the key things, you know, was the trade deadline. I really believe that was key. You know, trading Justin Schultz, I don't know if it's fair or unfair or whatnot, but he had become a real, I guess, poster boy for what a lot of people felt ailed the Oilers. Not very good defensively and not very competitive. And, you know, I'm not a big believer in saying what you're going to do. You know, as long as you're your players, dig in with them, work with them, and Todd did that. But it's the actions that ultimately speak. And I think what Peter Chiarelli did at the trade deadline spoke volumes. And I think it also puts players on notice that change is coming. And here's the beginning of it, and we're not stopping here. And, you know, that's what you want to see, how players respond under those types of demands and challenges. And at the same time, you know that you've got to be careful in being too harsh right now. And I'll say that because of the injuries to the blue line. Talbot decided to tie him up. Good signing. And now you still got to do some things. But absolutely, you have to feel encouraged by what they've seen here in the recent weeks.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, were you ever part of an organization? And this might be a tough one to answer, but I looked at Justin Schultz, and yet he definitely needed to move. I almost felt like it was an addition by subtraction because sometimes, you know, it's kind of like having that negative friend around. Eventually, like, man, I just don't want to hang out with that guy. It's always Eeyore and woe is me. And I looked at Schultz and his body language on the ice, and he just, yeah, sure, he tried, but he wasn't accomplishing anything. And by just moving him out of the equation, it makes others better or less stressed. Were you ever part of a situation where it was just like, you know what, we had to eliminate a guy from the group, and even though, you know, the player you get back in return is nothing for now, it made our group better?
Well, yeah, absolutely, you do that. I'll give you an example, and you know, and it's certainly not a negative, but we had Dave Gagne and Mike Modano as our two centers, and we had looked at our team, and Dave played and everything, and we traded for Joe Nieuwendyk. We just thought we had to upgrade that center ice position. So now Dave went over to the wing. Okay, now David played center. He played hard. He's got a career. And we started looking, and Dave wasn't a very good winger. And he tried, though. He worked at it, and now he's thinking, what about my career? And you're not getting as much out of him, and David's not feeling about it. And just the way you described it, we ended up trading him for Benny Holt, a true left winger. And I remember Doug Jarvis sitting down one day. He made the comment. He said, You know, David Gagne is a better player than Benoit Hogue, but we're a better team with Benoit Hogue. And, you know, I think that's a different example of addition by subtraction. I know that nothing came in other than a draft pick for Justin Schultz. But yes, that does happen when your team becomes better because you're removing a player that either doesn't fit, isn't happy there, you're not happy with them. And I think you have to be able to put your finger on that and act upon it. And certainly Peter did do that.
Craig, who are you watching this weekend?
Well, I was in Windsor last night. I was in Windsor last night and saw a good game between Sarnia and Windsor. A lot of good draft prospects. Chychrun didn't play. He had the stomach flu, from what I was told. But Sarnia went in there, battled for first place, and really took it to Windsor. You know where I think I'm going tomorrow, Jason? You want to guess?
Regina Moose Jaw?
Yep.
Well, sold out at the new Crush Can in the Jaw this weekend. Regina's going to sell out. Yeah, that rivalry is so awesome, some implications for sure. Now, quickly to Chychrun, can you compare? And it's hard because they're never going to be the same. But what style of defenseman for fans who've maybe never seen Chychrun is he similar to as far as style of an NHL defenseman?
Yeah. You know, I would. You know, it's always. I here's the guy I think he can be like, and maybe not at the same level, but up there. I think he can be like a Ryan McDonagh. Ryan McDonagh doesn't produce a lot of offense, but he's really efficient at getting the puck moving in out of your own zone and getting into the offensive zone through the neutral zone. Jacob's a terrific skater. He's competitive. I think he's good defensively, you know, in terms of closing off ice and getting the pucks. And Ryan's a really good player. You wouldn't consider Ryan a star player, per se. But I think that Ryan's game or Jacob's game, is somewhat similar, maybe more than somewhat similar to Ryan McDonagh.
Well, man, if he becomes that good, yeah. And you know what? I'm guessing then whoever drafts him, hope they don't trade him away for an aging Scott Gomez.
Well, you're right. And I think, too, but you know what happens, too, and I see it, and I always called it the curse of Jay Boumeister. Jay Boumeister was a great skater. I saw him play at 14. It was like, wow, what a skater. And, you know, when you skate that well, I think there's a lot of, assessments. Oh, he's going to be a great offensive player. Well, there's more to being a really good offensive player than just being a great skater. And Jacob is a great skater, but I don't think he's a great offensive player, and I don't think he's going to be. And that's why I use McDonagh as an example of that player that's really efficient, really good. You want him on your team, but you're not going to get great offense out of him. And you need all different types of players.